and welcome to episode 252 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, a place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of the daily Instagram comic Black, and joining me this week, the creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
Yeah. No, we surprised him.
Yeah, we surprised him this week. And also the creator of Atomic Hercules and Cockney Kung Fu and God knows what else. It's Tony Esmond.
Hello.
And also this week, we're back to the after a couple of weeks of silliness and frivolity and basically back not having any we haven't had any plans for the past couple of weeks, have we? We've been just recording stuff
by the people.
Yeah. Yeah, but we're back to having wonderful, fantastic independent comic guests this week. And we are very pleased to be joined by a creator who has been on the show briefly, if you remember back to our True Believers, a bit of audio we had earlier this year. And the creator of many a dark and spooky book that has kept us awake at night, such as The Vicious Creatures and Strip.
Read that this afternoon.
Yeah.
Dear me.
We've all had nightmares since. Yes, we are joined this week by the wonderful Sarah Gordon. Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Sarah.
There was almost a concerted effort to seem really cheerful and chirpy, considering we just described you as a creator that sort of does create.
I was reading Strip earlier, and I'm thinking this is good. I'm liking where this is going. Oh my God, what's happening now?
I think many readers have probably caught like that.
Yeah.
Yes. And obviously, we're going to talk about Sarah's work, the dark, amusing, and just strange journey of comics that she's been on, including maybe an owl burning. What do we mean by that? You'll find out later. And they'll also find out if we can do a decent sponsorship ad this week. Do you know why?
I doubt it.
Let's give it a go.
Yeah, let's give it a go. We are sponsored, as always, by the lovely folks at Comic House. Yes, the indie comic marketplace with a difference, because they absolutely love indie comics. You know, I mean, that doesn't sound like much of a difference when it's an indie comic marketplace, but they actually do genuinely care if you've ever met them.
Yeah, I've met a few comic marketplace people, and they're not all the same. I'm going to be honest with you.
No. If you go to comichouse.com, there's a huge selection of titles on the database. Lots of creators sort of list their books on there for free, start selling hard copies straight away, and they have a brilliant app which we chirp on about every week, and we love it. It's basically like Netflix for comics, a subscription service for only £3 a month, and you get access to the enormous library of digital indie comics, which is just getting bigger every week on week. What sort of stuff is there on there at the moment, Dan?
Newly uploaded, we got the Nottingham Comic Convention anthology, Volume 4, Slings and Arrows, and it's got a fantastic cover by Chris Imber. I think that's coloured by the Reckless Studio.
Boys. I think I'm in that one with Mr. Prolix.
Ah, nice one.
Yeah,
we've got Black Deer and a new one, Realm of the Owls: Logical Connections, Volume 1, and there's a whole slew of other titles. There's a load of print ones here actually I haven't come across.
Okay,
really?
Silicon Heart, Christo, Jonathan Wackup and the Planet of Weralt.
Ah, yes.
Jonathan who, sorry?
Crackup.
Crackup. I thought you said Wackup. Sorry.
All right. No, he's a duck. Quack.
Oh, right. Okay.
Love it. Love it. Play on words.
Not
yes.
Duck comics get me every time.
Yeah, Silicon Heart and Christo by Sam Rhodes.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Which we talked about Cryowolf just a couple of weeks ago on the show.
Yes, nice.
Yeah, a brilliant writer, so definitely check out his stuff there. And there's loads of that and more. I've got a little to read pile on there at the moment that I'm looking forward to getting stuck into, because it may be one of the only places I'm getting digital indie comics at the moment. But we'll leave that controversial topic behind, because right now you just need to go to comichouse.com, find out more about the 14-day free trial, and if you use the code, is the code still available?
Yes, stay safe.
I believe so.
Yeah,
yes.
The code stay safe. You get an extra month of membership as well. And membership is only £3 a month. Come on, we spend more than that on sandwiches.
Not anymore.
No, I make my own.
Yeah.
Yeah. I bet you make a good sandwich, Tony.
I do. It's like a Scooby-Doo sandwich.
Oh, did you ever think that when you watched the cartoon that those sandwiches, although animated, did look delicious?
They did. I remember thinking, oh, I quite like that. And back when I was a meat eater, I used to think, oh, that was sort of sliced meat, salami. Yeah. That looked good. Yeah
lovely.
You know what? It's a tragedy. I don't think I've ever tried to do that kind of bigger sandwich.
I don't think I have either. Yeah. Have you ever tried to do a big sandwich, Sarah?
All the time. In fact, I think I had one. I had a BLT before I came on today. It was massive.
Are your sandwiches normally full of like crows and things? That's the
crows and things, like bits of bone.
Yeah.
Maybe small child fingers. Like, maybe every now and again. You know, depends on what I'm feeling like. Sometimes I'm quite happy with an egg and cress, but
me too.
Yeah.
Oh dear. So go to comichouse.com.
That went alright.
Yeah, that was alright, wasn't it?
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's a very Partridge question, isn't it? Have you ever had a big sandwich?
What's the biggest sandwich you've ever had?
Yeah. Phone lines are open. Call in now.
Yeah, I'm quite fond of a coronation chicken.
Yeah. Now Partridge would be cheese and pickle.
Cheese and pickle. Yeah, I remember years and years ago hearing on the news that cheese and pickle was scientifically proven to be the best sandwich.
Really?
Yeah.
You get all these stupid facts, like, oh, drinking a pint of wine makes you live longer. It doesn't, does it? You get all these stupid facts that come out.
But the best sandwich is completely subjective.
Yeah. Yes, thank you.
Let's carry this on the sandwich podcast we got lined up, because this is good material. Yeah.
Sandwich bastards, that's what it's called. Yeah. God, we should I tell you what, we could get a lot of like info into that show. That sounds like a decent show. There must be a show about sandwiches. There's a podcast about fucking everything. And when we start that show,
there's probably a sandwich podcast lamenting, saying, I wonder if there's a podcast about making your own comics.
It's so smooth.
Yeah, this weird universe we live in. But it's a universe full of comics, which we love and we need right now. And there's lots of if you listen to this show every week, you know it's all about positivity. The world is a very strange place. If you listen to this week on week, we hope you're all right and staying healthy and being creative. I mean, one of the other sides of the coin of this whole situation we're in at the moment is, and I know you've mentioned it on the show before, there's a lot of creativity going around, isn't there, Tony?
Yeah, I'm noticing that more and more, aren't you? Mm. I am worried there's going to be an awful lot of lockdown autobiographical comics coming out soon, which I'm a little bit worried about, because with people not getting out much. I think let's let your imaginations fly. Let's not just have stories about you sitting on the couch. But yeah, there is. I know it's Dan, Bearsark Artist, he stuck one up today, didn't he? He started one today.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. And there's, you know, and probably people are reading more than never, I hope.
Although the
weekly releases are a little bit.
Well, they reckon, I've just had an email from Comic Book Toolbox to say we got about 2 weeks and then they're going to start slowly trickling back into our pool. So that's good. Yeah.
But
I did see photos of stands that they're now going to have in Walmart of comics.
Oh, have you got that article to hand? Because it's sort of an independent sort of company, isn't it?
Yeah. I've not got it to hand, but I saw the photo of it and I was like, wow, that's really great if you can kind of get those stands into Walmart's fucking all over the place in the States, so that'd be a great way of trying to get comics back into people's hands.
Well, DC did it, didn't they? It was a little bit of a failed
it didn't really work. Didn't they go for the oversized ones?
And I think the problem is that they had a contract with Walmart that they could only sell them in Walmart for a certain amount of time. Because I've been and bought some of them. They had some of them in Food and Planet, and I wanted to catch up on the Swamp Thing one and stuff, but they were like a tenner each.
Bloody hell.
Yeah.
It is the new publisher from Mitch and Elizabeth Breitweiser.
Well, we both love their art, don't we? We're fans of Elizabeth's colouring, aren't we? Beautiful.
She and Sarah?
Yeah.
Sarah?
Yeah, she was. Yeah, that's right.
Allegiance Arts and Entertainment. They were formed, I mean, I'm literally looking this up as we're speaking. They were formed by creators and husband and wife team Mitch Breitweiser and Elizabeth Breitweiser, with a businessman, David Martin. A businessman? I don't know why I said it like that. You will see Walmart place end cap displays in over 3,000 stores, which is about 70% of Walmart's, with four launch titles, each priced at $4.98 for 24 pages of story. which they've noticed is 1 cent less than DC's titles.
God, right, really? Okay.
Each display will have 10 copies of each title per store, with space to display back issues as well. So they will also, but in a move away from DC and Marvel's offerings, they'll also be available on Walmart.com. And what are the titles? We've got the Futurists, Nora's Saga, Base Reeves, and Red Rooster. It doesn't have the fourth one because I'm reading it from. Oh my God! I just realised what website I'm on. Oh God.
They're Indiegogo, aren't they? Aren't they Indiegogo?
Some of them were, successful Indiegogos and stuff. But, you know, it's going to be an interesting experiment. And now's the time.
Yeah. Any comics is good comics, man. Let's get on with it. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're all about getting comics into more people's hands and discovering comics that you may not have known about before. And, you know.
This is the segues coming.
Well, it's not now. You've ruined it. And we're all about getting fantastic creators that you may not know about, or maybe you've seen their work but want to learn more about it. And that's why we're getting more guests on, because people have had enough of us talking at you for weeks on weeks. So Sarah Gordon is here on the show, and she was very kind enough to send us some PDFs of work. I've got we've got copies as well.
Yep.
And in this world where we're talking about positivity and lightness, Sarah creates quite dark stories in their own way. I mean, we'll get on to one of your newest ones, Strip, in a minute.
Oh, that's the oldest one that you've got.
I can't imagine why the three of us are fixated on that one at all.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
But on the show, I mean, we have talked about Vicious Creatures on the show itself, and that is currently still hard at work at that, aren't you?
I am, yeah. I'm still in the finishing stages of it, I guess. I've got a couple of pages left to draw, and I'm currently going through and, you know, flatting everything, colouring, and waiting for some notes back from my editor. So it's so close. Huh?
It's a coloured one, is it? Which is...
Yeah, so the idea is, so I started releasing the collection a couple of years back, I guess, and they were all sort of black and white. I tend to work black and white first, but I decided I kind of wanted to get a colour collection sort of going. I really like working in colour, and I basically kickstarted a collection so that I could, you know, come up with a nice shiny colourful book. Mm. Yeah.
Nice. I'm looking forward to seeing that, but I do love your black and white, the heavy... Yeah. Oh, brushy blacks. Yeah, really
fun,
good.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It really is. Yeah.
I enjoy working like that. It's I guess when I'm not working as a comics creator, I'm kind of a freelance graphic designer / animator / illustrator.
Which totally speak. I mean, if you just look at the covers of the Vicious Creatures issues, that completely comes across the
group. Yeah,
they appeal to my collector mentality. Yeah. Sarah, which is always a good thing. They fit. They're different, but they fit nicely into a series, don't they?
Yeah,
it's good. I'm pleased it locks up for you.
Just tell us a little bit what Vicious Creatures sort of is as a concept and as a whole thing.
Well, I guess in a nutshell, once it's actually finished as a book, it'll be a collection of 9 short stories, all based around like a 9-panel grid kind of. Sort of format kind of thing, and they're all like basically beating the boundaries of what I think the state of folk horror is in the UK comic scene right now. So it's sort of ranging from the more sort of gothic horror sort of side of stuff through to like full-on Wicker Man sort of style stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of my love letter to a genre that I'm very fond of. So that.
And it's a genre that we've spoken about with increasing sort of frequency probably over the last year or so. It's certainly come more into my sort of view.
Yeah, I think it definitely has.
And I think we've spoken before, horror can be quite a tricky thing to do in comics, but I think folk horror has a real sort of niche and knack within comics, isn't it? You can really, because comics are good at creeping you out if you do it right and you know, for you, what is a folk horror story?
That's a hard one. I guess like the initial sort of reaction that I tend to have to that would be like, it's going to sound really dumb. I'm sorry. It's like it's horror that comes from, you know, like people, I guess, as opposed to it being about like cosmic horror. So it's like, you know, it's not so much to do with like, you know, fear of, you know, stuff that you can't quite comprehend or something like that. It's this like itching, insidious sort of nagging anxiety about, you know, the people around you, you know, where you come from, stuff to do with, you know, the sort of territory that you sort of, you know, come from, like the end of the earth and that sort of stuff. So yeah, it's okay. Kind of, it's stuff that's sort of tangible and sort of, you know, part of the mundane that then sort of like slides off a little bit and goes kind of wrong, I think.
I suppose my view of it as an outsider, it's not something I write or you know, I read your stuff and a couple of other things, is there always a historical element to it at all? Or?
I think a lot of people tend to think that, yeah, it quite often seems to be quite sort of solidly grounded in the olden days.
Gothic houses.
It's quite nostalgic, I suppose, in a lot of ways, as opposed to perhaps like cosmic horror would possibly lean a little bit more futuristic or sci-fi.
Or slasher horror or something that. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, I get you.
The stuff set in the past, it's kind of like, it feels like kind of mythic or stories passed down, so they have a kind of a greater weight to them.
Yeah.
As opposed to if you told some of the stories today, they got a lot more strength and they're sort of anchored in the past like you do.
I think so, yeah. I guess it's that, you know, sort of playing around with like folk tales and stuff, I suppose. Like, there's a sort of collective storytelling kind of thing that we all, you know, we've all read Little Red Riding Hood, and there's this sort of like element of nostalgia, I think. That nostalgia that's kind of been twisted a bit and gone a little bit awry, I suppose. Mm. That's fun to play around with.
I think it's sort of, it pops up in all mediums, doesn't it? So I was just thinking of A Company of Wolves when you said that. Mm. You know, it does pop up all over the place. It's a one that's interesting, but we don't see a huge amount of, do you think?
I mean, I guess that, like you were saying earlier, I feel like it's kind of having a bit of a resurgence at the moment.
Okay.
But yeah. I suppose, yeah, there's not enough of it out there, and particularly not in this sort of the iteration of it that I'm finding quite interesting at the moment. Like, just trying to think of...
Yeah, what sort of thing is that?
Well, I suppose I'm sort of interested in stuff like, have you read, what's it called? I've completely forgotten.
No, right.
It doesn't matter. There should be more of it, basically. That's kind of where I'm at with all of this right now.
Are you finding your influences are coming just purely from comics, or is it novels and movies? And I suppose even music. I mean, folk music tells stories, doesn't it? Essentially.
Yeah. I do like my folk music, but I guess if you're going for sort of musical influences or something, I listen to a lot of Radiohead, and I listen to a lot of Kate Bush.
Kate Bush has got that folk element. Yeah. To be fair, I've had some folk music playing on a cassette tape in a car in my 20s, mm-hmm. and a woman turned it off. She didn't like it. I completely lost out on that date because I was into
I'm so sorry to hear that.
Fothering gay or someone like that. You know what I mean?
Tony, for the last time, Chaz and Dave is not.
Chaz and Dave is.
It's not.
It is.
Was it the Clannad soundtrack to the Robin of Sherwood?
McCall by Clannad, yeah.
Oh, dear. Yeah. But I think folk is definitely, I mean, in popular culture, everything always sort of hits in waves, doesn't it? Where, you know, you're seeing a lot of 80s retro stuff at the moment, and certainly with folk sort of horror and folk tales, that's definitely coming back, whether it be in the music or certainly in movies like Midsommar and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, you're seeing it. Yeah. I mean, one thing that always gets, and since delving into the genre a bit more, that maybe I'm like, well, it's not just this. Everyone goes, oh, folk horror, Wicker Man. And I always think, well, it's more, but that's always the go-to, isn't it? That's always the template.
Yeah.
It's a banger.
Yeah. But it's such an expansive sort of genre,
original,
isn't it?
Not remake.
Oh, I'm not seeing the remake.
The bees! The bees!
The bees! Cage is his finest.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 The gif of him in a bear suit punching someone in the face. Unbelievable. Let's talk about Nicolas Cage for the next couple of hours. So what are your influences when it comes to your work then? Because obviously we're talking about folk horror, but you're not, you know, we're not going to paint you as exclusive. You're not an exclusively folk horror sort of artist, are you? I mean, vicious creatures.
You live in a cottage in the woods and, you know.
No, I mean, that would be nice, wouldn't it?
No,
the last 10 years I've been living in London. I'm actually out at the moment on a sort of temporary sabbatical from city life out in Norfolk in M.R.
That's
James
a bit
country.
Folky.
Yes, a bit, very folky. Yeah. Yeah.
When I say folky, I mean inbred. Do you know what I mean?
That's
what I'm saying.
Oh my God.
How rude.
You can email your complaints to tony.awesomecomicspod.
Well, I used to go to boarding school in Ipswich, and a lot of the day boys were from Norfolk, and they loved a fight. I've got to tell you, Jesus Christ, a pint of salt. fight. That was an evening for them. Yeah.
I grew up on the outskirts of East Anglia, so I'm from Northamptonshire originally, right. And yeah, it's very different. Yeah. There we go. Influences. You asked about influences.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I don't know. I mean, I absorb an awful lot of stuff, but if you were gonna think about the things that I've been reading recently and reading whilst sort of, you know, in conjunction writing this book, drawing this book, I guess M.R. James, Arthur Machen.
I can definitely see M.R. James in certain, like for instance, Bright Young Things definitely has a M.R. James kind of feel to it.
Well, thank you very much. That's very high praise.
we do it occasionally on this show.
But you know, like that sort of quite solipsistic, like I guess kind of turn of the century. Sort of ghost stories were big in like the end of the Victorian era. Well, the Victorians were massive on that sort of stuff. They were big goths, but like Edwardian storytelling in that sort of like slightly fusty old schoolboy sort of way of doing things. It's all quite sort of, as I say, solipsistic and quite sort of introverted. It's something that I've always been quite sort of interested in, that kind of dark, cloying kind of way of telling a story. And I think that it's something that, like comics in particular, it's, like I say, it's got this like way of creating this quite sort of insidious, slow, sort of lurking, festering sort of, you know, artworky sort of thing that kind of builds up a little bit. And I've just been playing around with that, I guess. I think that horror is quite difficult to do in the same way that you do with films and stuff like that in comics, but there is a lot that's uncomfortable and uncanny, I guess.
Yeah, you got to build the tension in a comic, I think, a lot more than you can. You can just suddenly have a jump shot in a movie, can't you, that doesn't work in a comic quite so much.
Doesn't at all. Tried it, doesn't work.
Because comics are definitely sort of building a rhythm, isn't it? It's building to a crescendo, especially with the shorter, sharper sort of, like, you know, short stories and things like that. And like with horror as well, like, it's always better, I think, when you're building that sense of unease rather than the short, sharp, stabby, sort of gory moments. You know, the ones that stick with me are the ones that, like, are, like, building, you know, whether it's Junji Ito's sort of, like, what's the story with the mountain? I always forget it. It's one of my favourites.
Oh, I don't know. I've only got the one with the cats, which I haven't read yet.
I've got Uzumaki, obviously, yeah. And Gyo is currently sitting and staring at me from my bookshelf.
Yeah. Yeah, probably literally. That might come alive and kill you in the middle of the night.
It's horrible.
Such a creepy book.
Goals, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Whoa. Sharks with crab's legs.
Bah. Terrible. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Great book. Everyone should get it. But how did you come to comics, though? Because obviously, I'm guessing you have a graphic design background.
Oh, well, I have an illustration and fine art background, I guess. So I went to college in London. I went to art college at Camberwell, of all places.
Oh, I know Camberwell Art College very well. Yeah.
Lovely place. Delightful. Yeah, yeah. And I think that had you have talked to me back when I was doing my undergraduate degree, I was all set to go off and be an animator. I was quite into that. Started off on a fine art course, decided that I didn't have enough of a trust fund behind me to actually make it as an art student. You know, yeah. It just wasn't going to happen. So I needed to, you know, go off and actually find something interesting to do career-wise that sort of worked with, you know, being able to sort of, you know, draw or whatever. Tried working in animation for a year or so. So I used to do music videos and stuff. I think probably my biggest claim to fame with that was I once did a music video for George Michael, which was awful. It's really, really bad. For his cover of Blue Monday, was it, or something? He did something by New Order.
Okay. Anyway,
No, I was. I'm terribly sorry. Anybody who saw that was responsible for the character designs. It was really bad. Then decided, maybe animation wasn't really for me, and started looking around for, you know, sort of other creative outlets, I guess. Ended up landing a job as a sort of an artist's assistant to an independent cartoonist, and discovered that I really liked, you know, telling stories through comics, I guess. I mean, they've always been there in sort of, you know, the background of stuff that I was doing. I mean, I was making zines, and I was going to Thought Bubble back when I was, you know, a student, and just sort of, you know, playing around with the medium, but not necessarily taking it super seriously. But probably got to about 2015, and I realized that actually I really like this as like a method of putting stories out and stuff, and I kind of want to experiment with it. And that's when I ended up, writing and drawing Strip. So, I guess that's where it all began, really. Just sort of, you know, segued into sort of indie sort of stuff, looking for a way of telling stories that wasn't, you know, like involving big music video budgets or anything like that. Really like comics. You can just get up there and do it. If you've got access to a photocopier or something, it's great.
Yeah. Are you mainly self-published, or do you pitch stories as well? Or
I have. I mean, for the moment, I am mainly self-published. I put a few things into different anthologies and stuff.
Okay.
Over the last couple of years, so I have a little mini series coming out in a thing called Meanwhile Magazine.
Yes, Meanwhile. From Soaring Penguin. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah. I think their big flagship thing is probably Strange Haven, which I'm very fond
of. Yeah, we talked about Strange Haven a couple of weeks ago. I'm a fan of Strange. I've got a page hanging on the wall actually in front of me.
That's good.
The, I was reading it back in. I used to buy him off him in Bristol in the 90s.
Oh, really?
And it's an amazing story and it touches on folk horror and it touches on stuff like The Prisoner. And weird time travel things, and it's a really interesting story. I've got to be honest with you. Yeah, really good.
Now, back last Thought Bubble, 2019 Thought Bubble, sat with Gary for a bit, and we had some wine. We chatted about some stuff. No, he's a good guy. I'm pleased that
he likes
actually
to talk about punk
story.
Music, doesn't he? I remember chatting to him about comics. And he says, "Oh," and then I mentioned music, and he sort of took off from there.
Big on that. I've forgotten where I was now.
You were talking about being in other anthologies.
Oh, yeah, of course, thank you. Meanwhile Anthology, I've had a few things out with, I've done a B-side for Phonogram, so Kieran Gillen's thing that he was doing a couple of years ago. Yes, so I did that. What else have I been up to? Little bits here and there for various different sort of charity things and stuff, but so far, I've not actually I've not pitched anything like really big to anybody. I would like to, but COVID-19 is currently making me wonder whether or not that's ever going
to. I think it's, we need to see who survives after this one. I think there's going to be a few people not standing anymore. I've got to tell you. Yeah,
it's going to be interesting. It's all a bit hairy. So this is my first big, like chonky book collection thing that I've been coming up with. So
has it been quite good? Because obviously you're recolouring stories that you already have done, as well as that, I'm guessing they're stories that people haven't seen yet.
Oh yes, so half of the book was sort of things that I was releasing piecemeal with an idea of coming out with a collection at some point in the future.
Is that ideally the four books that I picked up from you at Tribute?
Yes, yeah. Mm. So that would have been Queen Rout was the first. Mm-hmm. I think Broken Thing was the second one. I'm not sure if you have that one. Then there was Salisbury Owl. Then Bright Young Thing. So those were the first four. And then there was Good Fortune, which I bought out as like a little mini thing. There are like 18 copies of that in existence because it's actually part of the second part of the book.
That. It's going to be a collectible soon. There you go.
It is. Yeah, there you are. the first sort of four stories, I was basically... So up until this point, any comics that I'd basically come up with between sort of graduation and about 2015, they'd all been sort of silent. I've always been a little bit like, I've always liked making stuff and everything, but like, I really, really like books and I really like words. And I guess I kind of put writing on a bit of a pedestal for a long time because it's, it's good. And I really love it and stuff. And drawing has always been something that I've kind of felt comfortable with doing, but actually putting words and, oh my God, dialogue and narrative and all of that sort of stuff into a story just seemed a little bit beyond me. So, Queen Rat was basically my first attempt at actually trying to come up with like a proper narrative. It was I think I ended up writing and drawing the whole thing in about 48 hours or something stupid.
Wow.
So,
that is
God.
It's a very dark story as well. I mean, talking of like the Victorian era and getting that sort of mood and atmosphere, and then when you're talking about, well, how can we talk about it without spoiling any of it? But it goes to dark places. In 48 hours, I mean, did you write the whole script before even touching the art?
No. I guess the way that I tend to go with this, I like to come up with like a skeleton idea of where I'm going to be going. So I know my like almost like my keyframes, if I'm thinking about it in terms of animation or something. I know my story beats, and I know the important moments that are sort of going to happen and stuff. So I have like the skeleton of the thing. But if I'm going to be doing a comics rush like that one was, then I think when it comes to, dialogue and stuff like that, you kind of write that as you go along. So it's kind of a combination of the two, I guess. It's, I would recommend it as an, I mean, maybe not 48 hours. 48 hours is a bit breakneck, and I'm not sure that I would officially recommend that to anybody because it's
good if you can get some really good drugs.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I find.
But don't do that because that's naughty. Maybe do that.
Are you strictly pen and paper, are you, or do you use Photoshop?
With these, I was trying to keep it quite simple. So I tend to find, well, up until this point, I was finding that I tend to sort of work in a bunch of different styles. It sort of depends on the kind of story that I'm telling or something like that. But I really wanted to start to really narrow it down to some quite, this is what I want the aesthetic of this thing to be like. I want to be in a position where I can't actually, I haven't got enough time to worry about the look of the thing. I just need to sort of go. So working in a medium like, pen and ink, if you make mistakes, then you make mistakes. You just got to live with them. So that was the reason behind it. So I think over the last couple of years in particular, I've gone proper traditional sort of ink and paper for a lot of the work that I put out for myself.
You've done some interesting sort of techniques as well. With ink. Tell, I mean, when you say traditional pen and ink, we're not talking about your Bic or anything like
no.
that.
No, we're talking brush, and we're talking a big vat of, with the initial comics, it was I tend to like using Indian ink, but for this particular collection, the latter half of the collection, I should say, so it's the stories that have been happening since 2018. I ended up making some special ink. Guys might have heard about this. I don't know.
Well, our listeners may not have. So
is it made of crow blood or is it?
Oh no, not exactly. I decided after the first four stories that, life is short and I kind of wanted to get this collection done sooner rather than later. And I've been doing, I've been creating comics sort of on the side of doing other freelancey stuff. And I was like, you know what, let's bite the bullet and let's actually try and make a proper go of this. So I ended up deciding that I was going to try and concentrate this collection and sort of, get it done within a year or so. So I kickstarted it halfway through the project. And I decided that, perhaps to make this a little bit more interesting and kind of sort of hard bake the authorial dependence on your readership and your audience and all that sort of stuff, I wanted to get some proper audience participation in with the comic at a really, really basic level. So one of the rewards that you could get for this Kickstarter campaign was that I was going to be collecting letters and words of whatever from people who backed to get a physical copy of the book, and I was then going to take all of those letters and burn them, and with the ashes of that I was going to make some special ink to make the rest of the book. And if we hit a certain threshold when it came to the cash, then I was not only going to do that, which was I guess kind of fun anyway, but I was going to do it in a massive great big wicker owl.
I have heard of this. I decided there was a bit of witchcraft going on. That's where I was. Clearly.
You may as well. Why not? Anyway, long story short, I guess we did. We hit that threshold, and I ended up, building a massive, great, big, 10-foot-high.
Because you think wicker owl and you think putting some letters into something that's maybe 2 foot tall at most. But this
thing—we've all done that. I mean, we've all done the 2 foot owl.
We've all done a 2 foot owl.
Of course we have.
Not Sarah though. I mean, if you've seen the video, it is an absolute beast, and it goes up like a
wicker owl,
like a wicker owl.
Just like that.
It's astonishing. I mean, when you were doing that though, I mean, surely you had to get the authorities to let them know.
So I was lucky enough to have some friends who've got some access to a bit of land. So we were doing it away from people. It wasn't in anybody's little garden or anything. Yeah. We called the fire brigade and we had chats with them the week before that it was going to happen and, all that sort of stuff. So don't try this at home.
That's a hell of a phone call for a fire to get while
You're going to do what?
Yeah, you'd probably just say, it's the Norfolk witches again.
It's Northamptonshire, it's fine. Oh, right, okay. We've got Alan Moore, so.
That's true. That's true. Yeah.
Standard, really.
Yeah. Oh, comic people are at it again. That's all.
Yeah.
So you had all of these, I guess, personal or just messages or anything. They could be whatever. And you, after this spectacular video, is a video on YouTube?
Video is on YouTube. I'll send you a link.
Brilliant, and we'll put that in the show notes.
Yeah, it's a bit sweary. Everybody, sorry.
they're listening to this.
That's true, actually.
Yeah, but once you had these ashes, so how did you go about making ink from the ashes then?
All right, so number one, if you ever want to try this at home, I will tell you right now that ashes are not necessarily the best kind of ink that you can make. If you really want to make your own ink, you should be using soot from like candles or something like that. However, if you're going to be like me and you're going to make a load of ink from a load of like ash, like paper ash or whatever, what you need to do is you need to shove your letters in something quite sort of tightly compacted, like a biscuit tin or something like that, so that they don't get too much oxygen. Then you sort of char everything up. Once you've got your charred pile of paper, you grind it up, you add some like alcohol, like vodka would probably do it. Ideally, like neat alcohol, like pure alcohol would probably
now
be best.
Talking.
Oh, yeah. Could probably also like some sterilized water. That's also kind of useful. You don't want anything going off and getting all sort of like nasty, and you don't want any germs in there, basically. And then you add some gum arabic and you stir that all together, and it actually makes something that is kind of like, it's workable as it's not as fine as Indian ink. You're not going to get the same sort of suspension. It's going to take quite a lot of grinding for you to sort of get to that point. I wouldn't recommend using a mortar and pestle. Sorry, I'm going really technical right now, but basically, if you want to make your own pigments and stuff, then the place I would recommend going is there's a little art shop called Cornelison's in London, and they have all the various different sort of equipment and stuff if you want to start grinding your own pigments and things. I ended up using one of their things. It's like this. It looks a bit like a mortar and pestle sort of thing, but it's got a big wide flat bottom. Just basically sat there and ground down my stupid pigment for about 3 hours or something like that. That's basically how you make a vat of ink.
Blimey. And yeah. Like, yeah. You must have you, do you still have the ink left? I mean,
I have so much of it left.
You've got enough, because I was gonna, you know, something so personal, yeah. It'd be kind of a nightmare if you got halfway through the first issue and you realized you didn't have enough ink.
Oh, we need another owl.
Well, I mean, the owl, obviously your listeners won't know about this, but the owl was made from a, you know, a giant wicker coffin thing, basically. So there's lots of ash.
It just gets better.
Far too. Yeah, I think you're in league with the devil now. I've decided it's not.
No. He would never talk to small people like me.
What was the plan for the wicker coffin? What was the plan for the wicker coffin initially?
Oh, it was the body of the owl. It was the like I basically, you know, I wasn't
going
to
buy a coffin though. Just
I did, yeah. Oh, I got to expense it as well as like a marketing thing. Best tax return ever.
I'm writing that on mine now. Fuck it.
Yeah, do it.
Yeah. What's the wicker owl for? Oh, don't worry. We burned it. We burned the coffin. Oh, don't worry. It was fine.
Yeah. Was there anyone in it? I don't think so.
No, it's just a lot of paper.
Didn't lie in it before I put it up, as you do. That was a bit strange.
That's a good way to market comics. Formulate some kind of sort of cult that involves burning owls.
Also, like, market it to that cult and have like the highest reward on your Kickstarter campaign. You could be in the wicker coffin,
the wicker owl,
and you become the ink.
I don't think about go, do
I'm
they?
Not sure that
I might not make it past the Kickstarter approval team. Burning someone alive to make ink for the book.
Yeah, if you hit the third stretch goal, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Human sacrifice.
Yeah.
Right.
Sacrificed.
Oh dear. Yeah. I mean, just imagine if you set that up and someone pledged on it, you'd be like, oh my god.
Oh no.
All my questions. I only prepared questions about the stripping comic. I didn't realise it was going this way.
Oh, sorry.
Well, you didn't expect wicker owls to become the focus.
Yeah.
But that is a good segue. I mean, because obviously, Strip, you said, was your first experiment into comics?
Yeah.
Is it really? So. Bloody hell. I thought that was. Yes. That's brilliant, mate. The movement in that.
Really accomplished. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. It wasn't exactly my first thing. So I'd done like little 5-page things here and there. Mm. You know, I'd sort of done odds and sods, I guess. But it's the first like sort of sustained thing that I'd drawn and written on my own. I should probably say that, having worked as an illustrator before now for other people. I've worked on other people's scripts and things. But yeah, it was my first like, can I actually carry a comic off. I'm not entirely sure. This is kind of like, this is kind of what I think that you can possibly do with the medium. I don't know much about when it comes to, you know, dialogue and narrative, but certainly when it comes to like coming up with a one-shot art piece. Plus I was,
I don't know much about stripping. I've never seen a stripper. But the I just wondered, did you have to go and do any did you have to go and do some research at all?
Did I have to go and do some research? I have some friends who do burlesque. So
there you go. It's very burlesque. Isn't it? Yeah, it's it's not a pub in the East End, that one, I gotta tell you. Yeah, it's much classier than that.
Yeah. And there is a bit more there's a bit more to the story that you know, for a first piece of work, which I guess you is it the first book you got printed and started selling?
It was the first one that I did on my own, really, I mean, beyond, so like I say, I had zines and things, but they were all a bit, you know, here and there, and it wasn't really comics exactly. It's kind of illustrations with sort of bits and I didn't really know what I was doing. This was very much I think I get comics, sort of. Let's try it out. It's that one.
And it certainly goes to some pretty bold places. And graphic in many ways, folks, which I know has already sparked the imaginations of our lovely listeners.
I'd love to have a little comic made of the people buying this at conventions.
Would it help if you knew that I actually dressed up as the character in it and handed it over to people?
Did
as
you really?
A performance. Yes, I did.
Oh my, that is next level.
This is still going to weird places. This interview. Here we go. Hold on, everyone.
There you go.
Where did you do that? Did you do that at Thought Bubble or?
I did it. I think I debuted it at MCM actually, but Thought Bubble was next. Yeah, it was October MCM. October MCM followed by Thought Bubble. It went down a treat at Thought Bubble.
MCM dressing like that is nothing, though, is it? People get on the train dressed like that, I suppose, don't they?
In terms of the actual book, because it is, it's a wordless narrative.
Well, it's a ponderance on all possible interpretations of the word strip, I suppose.
Exposure and
pun.
Self-revelation, is that it?
But I was wondering, in terms of like when people come to your like your table and stuff and they look through this book, because it is like a wordless sort of comic, and if they picked it up and read it, I mean, with a lot of wordless books, you can look through them fairly quickly. Have you had any bad experiences of people picking it up, essentially reading it in front of you, putting it down and then walking off?
Yeah, because strip has a double meaning. Let's face it. Comic strip is entirely more innocent than...
I mean, like, you know, if you make something like... Let's place it. I'm being a massive edgelord with that book. And if you make something like that, you understand and acknowledge the fact that it's not going to be something that everybody's going to like.
We like that, though.
In many ways, I guess it was me trying to, I don't know, like if you're scared of making, if you're feeling kind of nervous about making something creatively or something like that, then sometimes the best thing to do is to make possibly the worst thing or like something a bit transgressive, I guess. And I was like, well, this seems pretty, if I'm scared and I'm worried about, you know, making comics, I'm feeling a bit, you know, whatever about that. Maybe do the thing that is currently like, what could I do that is going to be a bit, I don't know, it's going to be, you know, it's going to make other things feel slightly easier to deal with after this. And it was basically that.
I mean, you certainly got away with you got away with tapping into people's sort of, I don't know, sort of fears. And I'm thinking of the Blobby comic. We've talked about M.R. James, the highbrow gothic literature. We've talked about strip and, you know, maybe horror connotations, but we're getting to the real meat of what we're here for, and that is the Mr. Blobby comic.
Mr. Blobby.
Which is a 5-page nightmare you will never forget.
Remember that character on TV being absolutely like, fucking hell. It was a bit full on. And that comes across so much in this comic.
Made worse by Noel Edmonds being much worse to look at.
For any of our listeners who aren't necessarily from the UK and you don't know Mr. Blobby,
Google it now.
Google it now. And we're sorry. But how did this story come about? Because it is one of the more effective sort of short horror stories I've read in quite some time.
All right. So I was approached by another small press, publisher, Frisian Comics. They were having they have got a guest editor in. Her name is Erica Price. And Erica Price was like, do you want to make a comic about Mr. Blobby at me. And I was like, and she was like, I'm thinking about making a collection of short stories, basically. And they're all going to be sort of, you know, centered around 90s Saturday evening sort of TV sort of stuff. But specifically, like, we think that Blobby is a monster. And could you possibly maybe, you know, put your particular spin on this? You know, you've got 5 pages, see what you can come up with. And it just so happened that I met Mr. Blobby once when I was a small child, and I've been scarred by him. And
he's the reason for all of this.
Yeah, basically you're reading my origin story there. I'm terrified of Mr. Blobby.
His pink and yellow poke with that hand. Loom's Lodge.
So, yes, I was asked.
And I tell you what, I mean, to go from, you know, just being asked to do a strip about Mr. Blobby to what you create, I mean, the last panel is fucking horrific.
It's been a real nightmare.
Yeah. Oh, God, really? That's probably why it's so effective, though. I mean, because, you know, we always say that some of the best comics are, like, really sort of personal comics, even though this has a very dark humour to it. You know, a panel where it's just got the dialogue is literally Blobby, Blobby, Blobby. You know, that is funny. Just looking at it now, it actually looks hilarious. But then, you know, to have that sort of switch, what is it about, like, you know, childhood characters or things that there's a real sort of uplift in, you know, like the Banana Splits had a horror movie recently, didn't they?
Yeah, I watched that. It's all right.
Yeah. There's very much about, like, the dark side of, like, kids' TV and kids' characters.
I have a personal theory about this, and I think it might all come down from the sort of, you know, the Hans Christian Andersen theory of, like, making stories for kids and stuff, like fairy tales in the original sense. Like, the idea was that you were supposed to tell scary stories to kids during Hans Christian Andersen sort of era so that they would huddle closer to their parents and bond with them. And I'm wondering whether there's a certain amount of that comes with kids' TV. I don't, either that or they're just like, I don't know, just they're monsters, they're just a terrible thing. Thinking about stuff like, you know, Mr. Nosy Bonk from like 1970s kids' TV. I don't know whether you guys remember him.
Yeah, that rings a bell.
Jesus. Mr. Nosy Bonk.
Yeah, look up Mr. Nosy Bonk. It's just awful.
Do I want that going in my browsing history?
It's a lot worse, to be fair.
Yeah,
it's been worse, Vince. Yes,
it's true.
Yes, you're right. Yeah, I remember this geezer. Horrific.
Dan's not afraid. He'll Google anything.
It's like the albino kind of like white masked dude with great big googly eyes and a long bulbous nose.
Oh, Christ. Yeah, I do remember that. Yeah.
Yeah.
My God.
That's like something out of a folk horror. That's like a folk horror mask. Yeah. Isn't it? Yeah. The mask they're wearing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, geez. Yeah, that is worrying.
Yeah. You know when, like, sometimes we have chats here and I immediately just start brainstorming an idea in my head and then think, oh, I have to write that at some point.
And he's basically got a knob for a nose.
Well, I'm not putting that into a story.
Okay.
Unless it makes it a stretch goal.
Is he like a nosy character?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't remember.
He was a dirty creeper. Oh. Oh, God.
I always remember going back to KCA TV, Finger Mouse. I can imagine it said, oh, you got like 15 grand to do this TV series and like spent as little as possible and then you pocket the rest.
Yeah. Well, it's like even the Magic Roundabout was like weird, wasn't it? Like, there was clearly some kind of drugs reference going on in that film.
Yeah.
Jamie and his Magic Torch.
Yeah.
Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
Peter Purvis, remember him?
What? Oh, God. Well, none of us are going to sleep tonight. Thanks.
Uh-uh.
That's what they invented Yew Tree for.
Oh, God. God.
Mr. Nosy Bonk.
Why don't we see Mr. Nosy Bonk? Oh, of course. Yeah. Forgot about that. But thankfully, you're just delving into the full colour of the folk horror at the moment rather than your nightmarish.
Oh yeah, no, I mostly do that. To be fair, I'm not actually that big on autobio stuff. There are some really good things out there, but like, you try and twist. You know, take your emotional experience and turn it into something else. Is my
agreed
personal approach to this?
Yeah, unless you can do it really in a really original way, then there's plenty of places we can go. We can go anywhere in comics, can't you?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You can do anything. You could even make a comic about Mr. Blobby. You never know. Anyway, there we go. Yeah.
Right. maybe that'll be the trend this year. Frisson and Press will take all the credit, of course. But how has it been sort of going back to the Vicious Creatures stuff and sort of like colouring up?
Going through it now?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all right.
That's it. Nice. It's all right. I mean, the booze helps.
Right. Yeah, it does, certainly. No, it's been going okay. I mean, there's a certain amount of, you know, I've been releasing these things in order, and sort of having to go back to where it all started with Queen Rat has been interesting. And I don't know, I suppose if you've ever had to go back over your old work, you sort of, you can see all the things that you would do differently.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
there's this sort of feeling of known incompetence now, I guess. But yeah, it's all right. It's okay. I'm really looking forward to getting the book finished, I have to say.
But it's going well. It's going well.
It's going well. It's a little, like I say, it's a bit late. Sorry about that, everybody who's been waiting on the Kickstarter handout and everything. But no, at the moment, I think that it looks like I should be releasing it at some point in July, I think.
Okay, nice.
So if MCM goes ahead, then probably there. If not, like, I'm taking pre-orders for the 31st. So yeah, it's like it's happening imminently. It's all good. So
which MCM do you mean there, Sarah?
Because MCM London. That one. Not Manchester. Not Birmingham.
That's the October one, I'm guessing. You mean, is it?
Is it not happening in July now? Yeah, I thought there was.
Oh, is it? Of course, it is.
It's currently pushed back to July. Right.
Yeah.
So if you had tickets or if you had tables, then it's still relevant for the July.
I'm a little dubious about that, I'll be honest.
I'm not holding out for it, I have to say. It would be nice if they could have a chat with us. Because it's...
Yeah, I won't disagree with you on that one. Bearing in mind, we put a lot of money into that place. Yeah.
Like, Thought Bubble are keeping us, you know, all up to date and stuff. And it's mostly fine, playing it by ear so far.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm thinking if that doesn't go ahead, then like a soft release... by the end of July, basically. So 31st is what I'm saying in my web shop. So,
Have you got a comic shop near you? Is it Close Encounters? Is there a Northampton version of that? Is there? Or?
I'm currently out in Norwich rather than Northamptonshire. Where I'm
there's a comic shop in Norwich. I've never been there, but I haven't been to the new one.
I say Norwich. I'm in Norfolk. I'm up on the very, very tip of the Norfolk coast right now.
Is that like Walsingham and all around there?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I'm not too far from Sheringham, actually.
Oh, I know Sheringham, yeah.
And there is not a single comic book shop anywhere near me, as far as I can tell. And I miss them so much.
Yeah.
What do you like picking up from your comic book shop, then?
I'm solidly indie most of the time. I really like small press. I think it's great. Yeah. There's so much going on at the moment. Apart from that, I guess probably more sort of probably image comics more than anything else. I've been reading recently. Mostly been doing like old stuff, actually. I've not been keeping up with recent stuff. I've been reading Lumberjanes, which is quite sweet and wholesome. Not like my sort of stuff at all.
I've got a couple of trades from that Sarah Harris gifted me that I need to start at some point.
Oh, it's really cute.
Ah, okay.
It's really, really sweet. There was also, I think it's called Fatal, which was out a few years ago, which is like Cthulhu-esque sort of.
Yeah, that's another one.
Yeah, Roy Baker and Phillips, isn't
it? It's good fun.
Yeah.
I've just finished that, and that was kind of great. Apart from that, just bits and bobs. So
how do you read them? Just sort of like in the sort of omnibus collections, or do you read digitally? I mean,
I have to admit that I'm mostly a trades person. Mm-hmm. When I do get single issues, then I tend to go digitally. And there will be things here and there. So if I'm looking at a series that I'm thinking about picking up, then I'll probably buy a couple of single issues, see what I think about it, and then either if I'm feeling kind of, you know, like, screw it, let's go for it, then maybe carry on with it in issues and then pick up the trades. Or if I'm a little bit more sort of on the fence, then I might wait for a little while and then get the trade first thing. So
I'm the same, very much sort of digital single issues, and then I just love having the book on the shelf.
So nice when it's all collected and kind of it's a good thing.
We love the printed book here on the show. Yes.
We do.
Enough
of them about.
Digital comics don't have the printed book smell. It's an important thing. There's a evocative experience.
And I'm actually at the point now where I realise different companies have different smells. You know, there's
no way.
Go on.
Genuinely. Yeah.
Mind blown.
Try huffing. We're in the realms of Tom Stewart here, but try huffing a Fantagraphics book and then try huffing a No-Brow book. Different smell.
That's true.
Different kind of ink, I guess.
Printers.
Do you think with like the bigger publishers, there's just there's not really any smell to them, is it? Do you think that speaks volumes to some of the content sometimes?
Ooh.
See what I've done there? Yeah. See what I've done there? That sound you heard with lots of minds just being blown.
Oh, God.
Tony doesn't want to admit it because out of all of us, you're the big two man, Tony. You're still loyal. You're still super loyal.
I know. And I hate myself for it most of the time. But
don't
yeah.
hate yourself. You know, comic, no. If you love it, you love it. No. You know.
Yeah.
I do when I buy every comic that a certain character comes in, and I have years of going, why am I buying this? Oh my God. Yeah. You know, the dark moments when I've woken up with insomnia, sweating. Wondering why I bought that copy of Captain America.
I mean, if that's the reason why you're waking up with insomnia, then your life's pretty good.
You know it's not. You know it's not.
Yeah. I was watching another one of those comic trope videos there. I seem to be pouring through them. And he was like doing the review of that Spider-Man, the clone saga. That's when he noped out of that, because I was like, I had a similar thing with that fucking Catwolf business. I just thought, done. It's fucking done with this. But have you ever come to that in a series, Tony?
I did it with the recent series of Batman. To be fair, I didn't go, no, I'm not buying it anymore. I just, no, I'm not reading anymore. And there's like 10 issues just staring at me now, which I know is shit.
Well, the thing is, you say, I'm not reading it anymore, but you're still buying it. Why are you still
buying
it?
That's why I hate myself in the middle of the night.
I guess if you're like 8 issues back, like you haven't read, and then you read it and think, oh, fucking hell, this is a duffer. And then you turn around and there's like, 30 quid's worth of comics there.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I know.
Tony, right?
Marvel Unlimited, baby. That's where I've gone with this.
Sarah, Dan, and me are all stepping in now. This is an intervention because you are in an abusive relationship. You are spending money that you have no intention of following through and reading.
I'll read them one day, Vince. I'll tell you what,
look at that excuse. I'll read them one day. Maybe they'll change. No.
I'll read them when I retire. Oh, yeah, I've been retired a year and a half.
I'll tell you what, if that arc hurt you on the first issue, it's still going to be the same arc on the sixth.
No, I know. Oh, we do occasionally send other panels going, why am I paying for this rubbish? Look, it's not all bad. It's just a lot of it.
I mean, most of the time with our WhatsApp group, we're sharing fantastic artwork by usually, like, I don't know, would it be independent books and creators? So
yeah, it's true.
And we will never let you know what issues that we don't like, because we're not in the game of that. It's all about sharing the love.
Yeah.
Positive.
It's Liefeld for the comedy value. That's where we go.
He's the best of us. he can draw and drive at the same time.
Yeah. Not once we get into politics, he started doing like a load of retweeting stuff about like COVID stuff being a conspiracy. I was like, don't do this, man.
He'll be turning down 5G towers next, won't he? Here we go.
Stick to not drawing feet properly and we're fine. Just don't fucking
ballet feet
are delightful.
just getting back to a tiny bit of positivity with you, Miss Sarah, my missus, I have a partner of a long standing who has never read a comic in her life. You could statistically fall over in my house and your head would hit a comic, and she despises me and she's despised the medium.
That's very aggressive.
Yeah, she's quite aggressive, quite violent. And I was looking at one of your comics, I think it was Broken Thing I was looking at earlier, and she went, oh, what's that you're reading? Which she has never asked me.
Whoa, that's great.
Yeah. And I said, the lady's coming on the podcast later. I really like this stuff. And she said, can you send me a screenshot? Because she's a bit of an artist, my wife. And she said, can you send me a screenshot of it? I'm going to draw that. So there you go.
Oh, nice one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I was going to bring that up, Sarah.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you say you like, you pour your kind of autobiographical stuff into your comics. Of all the ones you've done, the Broken Thing feels like that's very personal.
Yeah.
Is that the case?
A little bit, yeah. I have to say, yeah, that was a little bit, you know, when you're just starting off and you're kind of seeing how close to the grain you can get with stuff, I guess that would be that one. So yeah, okay. a little bit confessional, I suppose, but that's all right. Okay. Sometimes that.
Yeah, that's fine. That's
also about a crow lady living in the middle of the woods. I mean, it's not that.
No.
They're all about us, though, Sarah. That's the thing. All our comics are secretly about us that we just need to work out how. You know, I think.
Hide it.
I think one of the important things about your work is the art, obviously, and certainly if it converted Mrs. E, my God, it's supernaturally good.
My work here is done.
But in terms of like original pieces, do you keep original bits of artwork to sell, or?
I do. So at the moment, with all the Vicious Creatures stuff, I'm holding on to it because with the Kickstarter campaign, there was a like first dibs on some of the pages, sort of thing. So, but I think like a handful of people subscribe to that. So if I'm working with originals, if I'm working in ink and paper, then stuff is generally for sale. I don't necessarily have it with me on my table, but if you're inquiring, then yes, that would be.
There's some stunning pages, certainly, that I may be in touch if no one else takes them. I don't want to say what pages they are.
You don't want to highlight it. Other people might get wise to it.
Other people might get.
Quiet.
Yeah. No, I kind of want to ask on air, but I won't. No. I'm sure. So, did lots of people sign up for them, or is it just a few? I'm just hedging my bets here. I just want to see what the chances are.
Handful of people. So, if you've got your eyes on, say, I don't know, maybe as many that you can count on one hand, then there's probably there's not very many people who've signed up for it so far. So, there might be something available.
What size is the artwork? Because obviously these were like A5 sort of.
Yeah, they're A5 A5 books, and the collection will also be A5. But the first three stories are A4. So that would be the red one, the purple one, and the green one. And then after that, I've been working on A3 subsize stuff. So yeah, they're quite chunky, like big pieces of work.
So Bright Young Things is
big.
That's a big. Oh wow.
Oh yes. I think Rob David. I think I might know which particular. Page you might be interested.
Right, let's just put our cards on the table right now.
Don't do that, Vince. No, you're
I'm crap at gambling. And I don't want to spoil what it is, but the final page of artwork.
Oh yes, okay. The one with the panels on, or the one that is like a sort of in the distance-y sort of.
The one that's kind of in the distance, because there's a bit of text. The story ends with a little bit of text, a beautifully poetic bit of text that sort of bookends the story.
No one's expressed an interest in that so far. Not yet.
Brilliant. There you go.
It's actually I can't tell anybody. Sorry, no, I'm not gonna spoil it. I might have some information for you about that and some context after the show.
Okay.
I'm pleased you like it. I really like that page. I was pleased with
it. Was just nice. The lighting and it's a very dynamic sort of use of like black and white and smoke and things like that. Yeah,
and I mean, it's probably something we could get as a present, Vince. Because I mean, we'll probably give it to you beforehand, but we don't really want to take it to Blackpool, do we? It's going to get ruined.
Will you stop about Blackpool? I mean, the chances of me going to Blackpool were minimal anyway, Tony. Right. No offense to Blackpool. Anyone that lives in Blackpool,
there's a chance.
I just want to say no offense to anyone in Blackpool.
Yeah, but, have you ever been there? I'm sorry that you live there. What about Great Yarmouth? That's all right, isn't it? Sarah, you must know a bit of Great Yarmouth.
I've passed through. It looks idyllic.
Yeah.
Very lovely.
I don't like the way you laughed.
It's a good place to get heroin. Put it that way if you need heroin.
Oh, right,
yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah.
That's your place.
Well, the darkness are from there, right? Old band. Anyway, there we go.
They are, the darkness are from there, aren't
they?
Blimey.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's good news for, you know, people who are looking forward to getting their Vicious Creatures. But if you haven't actually got it yet, you've got an online store where people can get the. Have you still got copies of the individual issues?
There will be, yes. So at the moment, you can get, at the time of talking, you can get digital copies of it on my Gumroad account. But I do have like a handful of the single issue stuff. I've been running those down over the last few cons because I've got a big collection coming out. But yes, you can get things online. It's all available, and you can pre-order the collection as well if you are so interested. Both digital and physical copies.
Yeah. Awesome. So well, there'll be a link in the show notes, etc., and also at the end of the show, we'll get Sarah to read out a link so you know where to go anyway. But yeah, definitely check it out because, you know, we're fans of the work.
Aww.
And we can't wait to see the stories that we haven't seen yet. So
I think you're going to like them. Great. One of them involves a frog orgy.
Fucking job done.
Maybe you'll like it. I don't know. We'll see.
I know that Mr. Cumber's a big fan of yours, and I'm sure that he'll love the frog orgy. He's a fan of the frog orgy.
Yeah, Cliff's been a big supporter for the last couple of years.
It's great.
Sometimes creating can sort of feel a bit like screaming into the void, but no, Cliff is very much a scream back, going, keep going.
Oh, God, does he scream back?
He's a screamer, isn't he? What a screamer.
His episode on the podcast he did about your work was fantastic.
Yeah.
That was a great little listen.
Yeah.
I have to admit, I was a bit shy, so I haven't listened to it, but he gave me a breakdown of what it was that he said, and I'm flattered and very honoured because he's got generally good taste with everybody else's work, so yes.
Please. He's got terrible taste, but in comics it's very good.
Oh, yes.
No, we love... Well, I'm doing a book with Cliff. He's a great artist as well.
He's really good.
That's a nice little segue to the shout-outs, isn't it, really?
It is, Popes.
That's
brilliant, Sarah, though. Thanks for that, mate.
Awesome.
Like I say, thank you very much for letting me, you know, blather about it. It's been a hell of a
blathering. Love to hear it.
So go forth and check out more of Sarah's work. And as it's the shout-outs, well, I mean, we've spoken enough about Cliff Cumber. Check out his podcast, Comics Unencumbered.
It's
very good, but do we need to say anything nice about him?
We're involved in something with him, aren't we?
Well, we are
kind of... too big-headed, do you?
Yeah, sure. I think that silence that everyone did just then probably broke his heart.
That was classic.
But we love you, Cliff, and also, Tony said, he's working on something with Cliff.
We are, babes. We are.
That's really exciting.
It's time to tell everyone. It's time to come out.
Well, okay. Do you want to take it away, Tony? Because obviously...
Well, as everyone knows, I'm involved in working on Space Warp with Pat Mills, Ian Ashcroft, Gareth Slightholm, and Mr. Cumber, and a slew of brilliant artists. Mm-hmm. And Pat's writing everything. I've written a text piece for it, which I'm very pleased with. And today it was announced that the art editor on the forthcoming Space Warp by the man who created 2000 AD Crisis, etc., is Mr. Vincenzo Hunt.
Hello.
Yeah, we're very pleased. We've known about it for a while, Dick. Yeah. We've been chatting about it.
Because I've been working with Pat and Lisa and like all the fantastic artists on putting it together. For those people sort of like, well, what are you going to do as an art editor?
Everything. You've got loads to do.
I'm shepherding and overseeing the sort of look of it and helping it. I mean, with all the amazing artwork and comics and the stuff that everyone involved in it has put together, I don't have to do that much to make it look good. So in fact,
you did a great banner, man. That the title is, it looks amazing. It's heard a lot of compliments to that online, isn't it?
Oh, good. It's been odd. Thank you. I just want to, it's a shout. So I want to say thank you to all the people that were very positive and supportive when I finally announced, I'm part of this. I don't quite know how to handle it. I normally am. but it's hugely exciting. It's also tapping into, we make comics on this show. We talk about writing and making comics, but graphic design and all of that, that's my bread and butter. And it sort of harkens back to when I used to do like album artwork for like small bands and stuff. So it's been proper fun. I'm designing some fun stuff for it, which obviously I'm working with Tony on a couple of bits as we speak. But it is going to be cracking. It's going to be coming soon. And
if you go to millsverse.com, there's a number of stories, opening stories, and they are, to a man, amazing. I have to say, it gives me that feeling of like comics like 2000 AD when they were just brilliant. And there's a lot of people who are involved in our little community, involved in the art and stuff as well, which is really nice to see.
And they've been absolutely smashing it out of the park.
One
of the reasons I'm most excited about getting a chance to be involved is getting a chance to see a lot of this artwork, which is just blowing my mind. So it's good, and it's coming soon, so stay tuned for more news.
If you go to millsverse.com, I've also started doing a series of video interviews. There's a couple already done as well, but I've did one with Ian Ashcroft this week, went live this morning, so have a look on YouTube. The link's on millsverse.com.
Check it out.
And in that, he talks through his process. It's really interesting. He's a gent, and Ian, proper
proper, you know, I mean,
real talent as well.
The rocket is taking off for him and all of the artists that are involved in this. So, you know, so stay tuned. It's going to be bloody amazing.
Well, that leads into one of my shout-outs, which is Kia Wordsmith, issue 2, by Dave West and Ian Ashcroft, which I got sent the pre-Kickstarter pages today.
Oh, nice.
I was just reading through them. I sent you a couple of images, didn't I, guys? And if there was ever an artist who would have been the person to say Vertigo, it's Ian.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Why he's not doing the Dreaming comic or something like that, I don't know.
God, that would have been so good.
Yeah, just amazing. Just absolutely amazing. I'll send you on your DMs if you've got your DMs open, Sarah. I'll send you one of them.
He is the man of 1,000 styles. I could just take my house to him all the time.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you met him, just a genuinely good human nice being.
Good egg.
Yeah.
Good egg.
I mean, he'll become so huge that he won't speak to any of us and he'll become a monster, surely. But but for now, he's absolutely cracking. Yeah, and while we're in the shout-outs, Tony's been smashing it out of the park with his podcast to help us get through the week.
Yeah, man.
It's been going well. Yeah, it's good. I'm enjoying it. I really am. It's we've had some... Last night we did one with Russell Olsen and Johnny Cannon. We did about Toth. Anyone who knows anything about Toth, he's the artist. There's not that much about him. He's never did any sort of long runs or anything, but he's the guy everyone should be looking at. And it's an hour and a half of just listening to two artists who know what they're talking about, tell stories. And
I'm really looking forward to this one because Toth is one.
Definitely, yeah.
I know, certainly, I criminally need to know more about.
Yeah, I'm relatively ignorant.
I've seen some beautiful sort of art books before of Toth.
Yeah, there's some great stuff out there. Just Google some of his pages and the how he designs a page, and he's famous for sort of using a minimal amount of marks to create such an impression. You know,
yeah. Looking at it now,
incredible,
it's gorgeous work.
It really is, mate.
Really good.
Yeah. I think you'd like it because he's heavy on the black and whites.
He is. He's good with the chiaroscuro sort of thing. Nice.
Yeah, have a look at that. Yeah. I did one on. I did one with Gary Hill about Punisher. I did one with Elena from Art 92 about Arkham Asylum. And I did one earlier in the week with Al Henderson about Give Me Liberty. Which Al said, "Should we do this book?" I said, "Yes," and I realised it was 521 pages. But we had we both read it in a day. It's everyone's been great, really good. It's just a bit of fun while we're locked down. You know, that's kind of the idea.
Yeah, it is. And Dan Butcher's
Dan's
coming
up. Dan's on his way.
Dan's on his way.
We did do one, and I was saying, "No, look, abort. Let's not do this one." And we've
should we say what we're gonna do? You might let people read along a bit because it's not out till next week, and we're doing Martial Law, and I think it's one people can have a look at quite easily. That one, and we're going to pick it apart a bit. Yeah, yeah. Good stuff. Nice. Yeah, very good. Thanks, mate. Cheers.
In terms of podcasts as well, I will put a shout out to one that has inspired me to buy some trade paperbacks to do a read along.
What are you
going to do there? John Locke and PJ Montgomery have started the GLA cast, which is where they're basically every episode is going to be them going through the 1997 Howard Porter and Grant Morrison. Is that it? That was it. Their run, because that was a seminal book for them when they were growing up, and the first episode is, you know, the sort of history of it. It's also a run that, remember, when I was a teenage lad, and I was buying Wizard magazine, and obviously in the height of Wizard magazine, that was in the 90s when, you know, those GLA covers and stuff and the Image stuff, that was...
GLA.
Otherwise, it's GLA.
I thought you meant, for a second, I thought you were talking about the Great Lakes Avengers comic, which is fucking awful.
Oh, God. No. The JLA. Sorry.
That's right.
That's why I don't write. No, the JLA. Why was I thinking G?
I don't know.
Yeah, no. But those comics were pretty big in the 90s, and I never read them.
That was the run after the one that we've talked about a few times, wasn't it? After the Wahaha series. It had been a mess towards the end of the sort of mid-90s. It had just gone...
And I think the Justice League team weren't... You know, they were only sort of like Z-listers, or it was just... It wasn't really anything, and then it was finally putting the big guns back together.
Yeah, wasn't it like the one where they reveal that Batman's got a plan for everyone? He knows how to destroy everyone.
I had never read it, so I'm going to... I think there's like omnibuses and stuff of them, so I'm going to get a a trade of it somewhere and just read
it. Because I know that comic Smell do a read along with the earlier run, the Wahaha run, which I've been reading along
with. Oh, nice.
As well.
Oh, I love that one as well. Yeah. Well, I might be inspired to do both. Yeah, so the JLA cast.
The BLA.
The BLC. I should have just said Justice League, but then again, that's it's not the same because the book was actually JLA, wasn't it? So
I think it was.
Yeah, it was.
So anyway, they need to make that right again. I miss the Justice League.
Yeah. What would you do with it? Oh God, with Atomic Hercules, God knows what you do with it. Jesus.
Wait, we've got Atomic Hercules travels to Uranus coming soon as well.
I mean,
of course he does.
I mean, we laugh, but I think he's serious, folks.
I am. It's a Treasury edition.
It's a Treasury edition, is it, Jesus?
That's the thing. Occasionally, me and Falpy go, right, we need a board meeting. So we have a board meeting. And just me and him making stupid things up.
Yeah, and then eventually they have successful Kickstarter campaigns and go to print.
173%.
Oh, dear.
People are going to regret that when they see the story. Especially if they like unicorns.
Oh, no.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no. We just lost all of our unicorn fans, Tony.
That's a big demographic it was.
Yeah, it's pretty big demographic.
Count them on one finger.
Yeah. You do know, Tony, if you harm a unicorn, you're destined to be cursed.
Is that true?
Unless you don't harm it.
In fact, quite the opposite.
Oh, do you know what? I know what scene he's talking about. I don't know. Let's not go any further. You've got a shout out as well, haven't you, Dan?
Well, yeah. So when this show goes live on the 4th, we're going to be posting up the results of the Awesome Comic Podcast draw off.
Oh, yeah. This was an odd one this week.
Yeah. I was really surprised that it kind of hit. It was one of the most popular ones, and people chose to insert a comic book character into a historically or a famous painting, was it? I think that was the brief. So it'd be interesting to see what people come up with. So check out the thread. I'll put it up in the morning, and I can't wait to see the results, see what people come up with.
Yes.
Also, this Wednesday, we've got Vanguard issue 18 launching.
Yes.
So check that out. You guys have already seen the cover on that one.
Yep.
And the spectacular theatrical trailer.
Yes.
Yeah, man, that's so good. Yeah.
So good.
Like I said, I can't hold my hand up. I didn't do all of it. It's like there's bits and bobs that I've used that I didn't make. But
the best parts of it, Dan, are the artwork. And you did all that. So.
Oh, thank you. And also a quick shout out to Matt Strott for doing the Vanguard Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles piece, because he heard me speaking about on the last show what comic would you like to own, and Matt's been sending me pictures. He owns the first five of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Wow.
Where does he live? What's his address?
Yeah.
So nice one. Thank you, Matt.
Yes, and thank you all for listening so far. You obviously want to go forth into your week and discover some new comic books, or you know, maybe you just want something fresh to read, whether it be a small comic book or maybe it's a huge heavy book that you could kill a person with. Well, we've got you covered this week, because it's time for the recommends. Sarah, would you like to go first to recommend something to our lovely listeners?
Yeah, sure. I've got two books that I think people might be interested in. One of which you can sort of see some of it online before you decide to get hold of it or something. So first one I was going to go for was Oh Haiku by Sergeant Rye. It's a book of illustrated haiku that he kickstarted last year, I think, and it's bloody gorgeous if you haven't seen it. Sergeant's work is just absolutely beautiful. I think all the haiku that are in the book are all sort of, they're little sort of poems that are all based in the same world. So all of the illustrations you see are all sort of like mapping towards this bigger sort of story that you can kind of almost see behind the art. Yeah, it's beautiful.
Sorry, are the haiku written by him as well, are they?
So he's written all the haiku. It's all taking place in the same universe, and it's sort of, it's not a linear narrative, but you get this build up of a sense of place. And Sergeant's work is just just absolutely bloody gorgeous. If you haven't seen it, like, it's, I think I first came across Sargent. Some people who, like, people who do the comic circuit and stuff might know him as the guy that will draw you as a sloth for like £3 or whatever it is. He's been doing it for years and years and years, and he always used to come out with these like little zines. Like, I think the first thing I picked up by him was something called Jar Jar Die, which was Jar Jar Binks dying in various different sort of ways. It was amazing. His stuff was very like irreverent and like quite sort of like, you know, knee jerk sort of reaction kind of thing. This is him digging into his, like, I guess, other emotions that he can evoke and stuff. Mm. And it's beautiful. I think more people should know about it. So,
I mean, I'm looking at the Kickstarter page, obviously, now, and there's some stunning, beautiful artwork.
Oh, it's amazing. Really amazing. Really evocative sort of stuff. So yeah, that might be a nice thing. It's something that you can absorb slowly, and if your brain's feeling a bit like pudding, like mine is, with, you know, everything going on at the moment, then it's a nice one to flick through. So I'd recommend that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Like a bit of poetry,
we put nice this? One at the beginning and then one.
Yeah,
that's
it. Yeah,
if you want.
Good.
Yeah.
That
sure.
That sounds good. Who wants to go next?
Should I go in?
Go on.
Go, yeah. Babes.
This one is off the back of the podcast. Never Own Anything. You did Tony did a special with Tom talking about My Friend Dharma.
Oh, yeah.
Durf Backduff, which isn't his real name. I was sadly let down. But, so everyone knows the kid. I'm not sure if they do know the conceit of this, but the author was a teen. Him and his group of friends had Jeffrey Dahmer, the serial killer, in their kind of. Sort of in their friend group. Would that be right to say,
yeah,
Tony?
Yeah, I would say they saw. He was in and out a bit, wasn't he? He was never sort of a core member, but he was certainly one they tried to have in their group, didn't they? I suppose. Yeah.
It's sort of like the author goes through and sort of points out that the real tragedy is like Dharma. There was obviously something really wrong with this guy, and he was never really picked up on all the way through. Of like him, there's loads of warning signals, and he even makes a point at the end of the book that when they did these interviews after what came out, what Dharma had done, that the teacher was saying, "Oh, I never really saw that. I couldn't see that." And it's like that was the fucking massive problem. They didn't even see any shit that went down. And it's a fascinating book. I really. I'm not one of these people that kind of really gets obsessed by, you know, that you get those types that obsess over serial killers and want to know every facet of their life.
Yeah, but, I think Netflix has only encouraged that over recent years, isn't it?
Yeah.
Crime.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much. There's times where there's one on the other day, and then it started like going into like them had like going after kids. It was like, I can't fucking do this. I'll just like. My tolerance for any of that kind of stuff is way gone. Mm. But like this, there's no actual murders in it. You don't see murders on screen, but there's the sort of real dark element running through it. Of you keep on thinking, you know how the story plays out, but they're like flashes of redemption for Dharma, and
you kind of hope, you know, he's going to be a serial killer, but at times you think, oh, I hope he doesn't. You know, you're swept along by the characterization in the book, which is brilliant.
Yeah,
yeah.
You I mean, it painted as a tragic figure. There's one we discussed before we started recording, and you mentioned it on your podcast, Danny, when he finds the stray dog.
Yeah.
He takes him back to, like, his sort of kill spot, and this kind of, like, dog kind of wins him over, and he just can't do it and lets it go. And then it does, like, a flip across an angle behind him of this, like, pile of skulls by where he's obviously killed loads of other dogs and animals.
Yeah.
And it said, like, it was the last time he showed mercy. And it was like, fucking hell. He kind of like, the author's got that skill of kind of bringing it right up, thinking, oh, look, there's a glimmer of hope. And then just instantly, like, the next page, dashing it.
Yeah.
But I thought the kind of, like, the book's great. It's got a lot of subject backup material. All the stuff he's done, so much research. And
yeah, he spent years interviewing people and stuff, didn't he? Yeah.
All the pages, if you go to notes at the back, of like reports of like what it relates to, if Dharma did something in the comic, and so this was done by like from the FBI report, blah 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 blah.
Yeah.
Mm. But you read at the end, and this bit kind of like struck me, and I didn't really go along with it. The premise of the book is that Dharma was a tragic figure, but not only applies to the moment he kills. After that horrible day in June 1978, the only tragedy is that Dharma didn't have the courage to put the gun to his head and end it. And I was kind of like, I can't.
Oh, I don't know where that came from. Wow. That seems strange. It doesn't seem in keeping with the spirit of the book almost.
That's from him, the author.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, I was really kind of surprised. Like, I thought, surely you've sort of, through this, you've seen.
I wonder if that's because there's a bit of. I've watched a couple of Durf interviews in relation to this before doing the podcast with Tom Stewart. And there's a little bit of. You could see where a couple of people have said to him, "You must have known, man. You could have put a stop to it." You know, I wonder whether there's a little bit of that hiding in that phrase, you know.
The only way to, you could answer that is saying, like, if I did know, don't you think I would have done something about it?
Of course, yeah. I don't think he did. In fact, when he gets a phone call to be told, "Oh, you never guess who's turned into a serial killer. We used to go to school with them."
Yeah.
Dahmer's his second guess.
Yeah. Dahmer's, he said someone else first.
Yeah.
There's I'm sure all of us could mention a couple of kids that you went to school with and you went, fucking hell, like, that kid is...
They probably picked me.
Yeah. I can think of quite a few people in the small press circuit who I'd take the
punch.
You know what I mean?
You know that geezer? Oh, he fucking murders people. Yeah, totally. You can totally see that.
Yeah. But, his comics are really good, though.
Yeah. Honestly, I'd really recommend it. I got it. It was one of those books I'd seen for years and years and years, the cover.
Me too.
I was like, I wouldn't mind checking that out. I've not seen the film. And then when you did the podcast on it, I was listening to it. I was like, this is fucking great. And I ordered it like there and then. And I wasn't let down. I really enjoyed it.
Good. And I think it's counterpointed by the fact that it's not done in a realistic way. It's done in a very undergroundy kind of way.
Mm. Yeah.
It's got that feel to it. It could easily be a stripping Weirdo magazine or something like that. You know, it's strange, isn't
there's
it?
There's a cartooning element to it rather than
there is. Yeah.
Real photorealistic. It's nothing like that, is it?
Completely. Yeah. Yeah. Which pulls the character out of them more, I think.
Definitely. Yeah. There's one, the real tragic bit right at the end is like when Dahmer's mum, basically him and his mum and dad had like a really bad divorce. And she says to him, like, "I'm moving out, I'm leaving this house, but you can't tell your dad. You've got to live here on your own." And it was like, that was the fucking final nail in the coffin. And the way does it so well. He's real mastery of like telling the story in this. So
yeah,
check it out.
Use silent pages. I mean, the first 8 pages are wordless of him sort of traipsing through, finding that, you know, it's very clever. Yeah, very good. I'd recommend it to everyone on this podcast, and I think you'd all enjoy it, you know. Mm.
Yeah,
I mean, essentially, there's a lot of stuff. I know you're a fan of the woods, Sarah. There's a lot of stuff happens in the woods. You know,
I think
you'd dig it, definitely.
Place.
Yeah. If I ever see you in the woods, I'm going to run away, though. I'm not being rude.
That's fair. That's fine.
I shall tell a personal anecdote when I was in secondary school.
We was
over our local country park. And we were just fucking doing stupid things like as boys do. And like seeing how big rocks you could pick up.
Right.
So we're doing it. And someone picked this fucking great big stone up off the ground. And underneath it was a Pat lunchbox.
Oh.
And it was like, well, what's this then? And we opened it up and it was full of like plastic bags of pills and shit like that.
Wow, okay.
And we was like, let's put that back and go.
Yeah. That's how you started your drug dealing business.
Yeah, I was about to say. Put that back. It was let's knock these back and go.
That's where I put them.
Nice one. That's a good choice, man. Great book. Absolutely great book. Yeah, definitely.
Shall I go next?
Okay, babes.
Got my hands on a book from Good Comics, our friends at Good Comics.
Nice.
Who have been churning out some good books recently, and they recently, I think it was they were going to launch it at Cardiff Comics Carnival.
I got a preview sent through just before that, actually. Yeah, you're right.
But obviously I'm a massive fan of Claire Spiller's work, and therefore I had to get my hands on a copy of Raze, r-a-z-e, which is out from good comics. 36 pages, a5, full color, although it's black and white with a splash of gold. And it's fucking awesome. it was only £5, and Good Comics put out a lovely sort of printed book as well. I'm always impressed by, you know, the books they put out. But this one's a great one. It's a story of old gods rewilding and the balance in the world between man and beast. Anyone who knows Claire's work knows sort of like nature and wildlife is very close to her heart. If you've looked at the book Lost Light, then
good point,
that one was very much about like light pollution on wildlife. This one is very much about man's effect on sort of wildlife due to roads and roadkill and things like that. There's always a interesting fact as well, you know, after you've read this story, which pulls you emotionally all over the place. But there's, she backs it up with facts about, like, you know, what she's talking about. Like, the UK has one of the densest road networks in the world. We have around 400,000 roads in our little country, enough that you could travel around the world 10 times if they were all stretched out. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And with 80% of the country being within 1 kilometre of a road, it is unavoidable that our wildlife is profoundly affected. Now, anyone who listens to the show knows that everyone on this show likes animals more than people.
Yeah, so, very true. Yeah.
So, and this is very much, I don't know about you, but whenever I've, I mean, my life is pretty much country roads, driving country roads, and, you know, I'm not a creature of the motorway, shall we say. So, you know, it's dual carriageways and country roads and stuff. And seeing animals that have been hit, you know, on the side of the road or in the middle of the road, I mean, even though, you know, it's nothing, you know, it's not your fault, it just it rips my heart out every time. And this book definitely tied into that sort of feeling. You know, I had that feeling just reading this book, because I don't know whether it is sort of it stirred old memories of those times, you know, all those times where you just see, I don't know, a fox that on the side of the road that's unfortunately been hit by a car. But this tells a story, it puts a spin on it, that long before man came along and nature, there were like old gods that basically helped, even though they're all very different. The gods worked with the creatures and everything sort of got along and it kept sort of a peace. And then basically, as man does, man comes along and kind of spoils it for everyone.
Fucks it up.
And the animals basically are just, they get the brunt of it in a lot of ways. And then it builds up to a crescendo, which I wasn't expecting, actually, because this it is a piece of fiction. It's a fictional story. It has a very folklore sort of feeling.
Oh,
really,
yeah, completely.
About it.
This is right up your street, Sarah. Yeah, totally.
This is very much, and its narrative is very poetic as well. It's like an otherworldly voice sort of talking over it. I mean, just get a good classical actor, to narrate this. It almost feels sort of alive anyway with the beauty of the artwork. But it builds up to basically the creatures are being sort of, well, you know what's happening to them if they're just being completely fucked over by cars all the time. And then the gods come together and create something new, which you'll see on the front cover is sort of it's like a spiritual sort of being, which looks like a giant stag, which has these wonderfully designed sort of antlers which come together in sort of almost like a halo in some sort of way. So, and it's really moving as this sort of new god witnesses everything that's going on, and when creatures are passing away, it's there for them in their final moments and things like that. And then it builds up to a crescendo. Like we were saying earlier, that stories have to, especially like with short narratives, they have to build, and this definitely builds, so that by the end, I was like, yeah, good, I'm glad that happened. I don't want to spoil it, but do you know what I mean, Tony? I mean,
completely. Yeah, it's nature's had enough.
Yeah,
it's what it says, isn't it?
Yeah. But with the black and white, and then there's a sort of golden yellow look of the creature. It's just beautiful stuff. Some of it's very dreamlike. There's Claire's artwork, and she can draw brilliant animals.
I'd like to see this expanded. I'd love to see in a big album. I think this is a nice little tease for something that she should be doing on a much bigger scale.
Once again, there's also, you know, there's certain pages, certain panels, certain artwork that's like, please let us have a print, let's have a bit of original artwork. You know, this is stunning. There's sort of like, whether it be watercolors, pencils, inks, whatever she's using for these pages is absolutely stunning. There's a bit of factual stuff at the back, which is always fascinating to read.
There is, isn't there?
And it, but not just talking about what man has done to the world, but how you can help. And there's
certainly, that's the one I liked.
And it was the same with Lost Light. If you want to find out more, for instance, like if you see any dead animal, report any animal collisions to your local council, gov.uk/report dead animal, and wildlife trusts such as the Badger Trust, which use data to better protect our wildlife. Badger Trust, which I believe Battle Badgers is incorporated with as well.
Oh, were they really? Okay. Yeah. It's weird, you know, the only escape we ever have these days is walking the dog and I've been walking the dog for about 5 miles a day, and the amount of nature I'm seeing out there now compared to the same walk I had, you know, 6 months ago, it's just, yeah, I think things are changing, which is nice. You know?
It's glorious. To see more stuff like that. And I think in some ways I gave a little bit too much away of the book, but I think if you see it for yourself, it's an experience that hit me so personally, it's immediately one of my favourite books of the year.
I really liked it. I had a good chat with Claire about it when I reviewed it, and I really like where she comes from around her work. Yeah, I think, and she's not one of these sort of egomaniacs. She puts a book out, it's good, and then she puts another book out, and it's good. And I like it for that, it's good stuff.
It's the best way. You know, it doesn't preach, but it affects, and that's the best sort of storytelling. So if you go to goodcomics.co.uk, you can buy it from there. Which I bought it a couple of days later; it arrived. I know people are worried about post and stuff at the moment, but Good Comics were properly.
I got to tell you, I've not had any problem with them. I mean, I've got a post office 50 steps from my front door, and I've not had any problem with posting stuff. So,
goodcomics.co.uk, it's on there. You can go to clairespiller.co.uk. We'll put the links in the show notes and stuff. But no, just another sort of brilliant book to add to the collection. Loved it. Absolutely.
Cool.
Okay, Tony, over to you.
Right, we're all going to join. Well, I'm sorry, you can join in spirit. Sarah, I know you haven't got this book, but yeah, you feel free to pipe in. It was our 250th the other day, and I belatedly sent the boys a little present because I'm proud of what we've achieved.
Hang on, I don't know if the mic could pick this up, but hang on, I'll just get it. Hold on.
What was that? Really, I didn't know that about you.
Yeah. I'll just get the book as well.
Oh dear.
Sorry from there, Sarah. That's rough food.
I did not know that I was going to go that like that. Right.
So it is Masters of British Comic Art by David Roach, published by Rebellion. Now, I don't know whether this is in fact the case. I'm going to tell you a little story now, but it may be that we have some form of involvement in this without us really knowing about it. So David Roach came to the Nobrow table, the Thought Bubble before last, and he was chatting to me about Nobrow, about the history of Nobrow, and of the couple of things that I gave him the email for Sam, the publisher, and I gave him a link to the podcast where I interviewed him on the Awesome Comics podcast. There you go. Mm-hmm. So whether he got some of the information from that, from our podcast, I'd like to think he did. Who knows? It'd be nice, you know. But this is a book. It's $39.99. It's 385 pages, big format hardcover, currently on sale on Amazon at $29.99, so it's 25% off. The cover recreates the famous Beatles poster of them walking across the zebra crossing, but instead of the Beatles, you've got Dan Dare, Judge Dredd, Rupert the Bear, and Tank Girl.
It's a great cover. What's that alien in the back as well?
Oh.
There's an alien, sort of one-eyed alien by the car.
Oh, yeah, actually. I'm not sure. Oh. I just noticed that. It's good. Yeah. Yeah, it's a lovely. There's no dust jacket. I prefer a book without a dust jacket. I'll be honest with you.
But it's got a lovely spot varnish. Ooh,
it has. Yeah, it has. You love that, don't you? Yeah. Graphic designers, of which I'm the only one who is. Dave, great, absolutely great. A real historian of comics. I recommend friending him on Facebook because he puts a load of original pages out of. Oh, I've never heard of this artist, or I've never seen this artist doing this before, and that sort of thing. And there's a couple of different sections in this. So it flits between, you know, Golden Age, British weeklies, the American invasion, more recent stuff, you know, the sort of indie scene, all that sort of thing. And there's reference after reference. I'm just looking at pages now. It's Marvel Man, Conan, Space Ace by Ron Turner, you know, caricatures, Dracula, you name it, it's in it. Underground Alternative is one of the sections, which over the UK, I think it's often forgotten for having that underground scene, you know, in the years gone by. So you get a detailed analysis of the art scene, but you also get some lovely single pages of the art. A lot of them are scans of the original artwork as well. So I'm just going to get you guys just to open a random page and tell me what you've got there, and it might give us a clue. I'm going to do that. I'll do the first one. So what have I opened it at? Oh, there you go. Don Lawrence. So from Carl the Viking. Anyone knows Don Lawrence? An absolute, you know, giant of British comics. This is from.
I was just looking through some pages.
Yeah.
I've spotted some art. The beauty of books like this, you discover artists that
you do,
and think, God, I didn't realise, you know, I didn't know this artist existed. One of my favourite pieces, I think, an art book's brilliant when it just has the focus on the cover and there's like, you know, you just see the artwork, and that's what this book does a lot of. There is one, when you do a comic book cover that is essentially a face, it has to be really good.
What page are you looking at here?
Well, I am looking at page 139. This is a page that just completely struck me out of the blue that I didn't think.
Okay.
It is from The Spectre. Issue 6 of 1993. A cover artwork by Gary Leach.
And love Gary Leach. Yeah. You've got to remember, he did the original Marvel Man.
Yeah. So good. And it is stunning. It is absolutely. And the size of this book, that's almost a full-size head.
It really is.
Yeah. It's massive.
Just quickly, the one I did was Don Lawrence. He's got a couple of pages from the Trigon Empire, which I bought recently. And that's, talk about beautiful artwork, man. Painted, just colours.
What page is that, Sonny?
We go to 257 of that one. 257, then it's 258 and 259. Sorry about this, Sarah.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah.
It's nice oversight. You know, what I like about these books, and it's the same when we talked about art books before, I think there was certain Jack Kirby ones as well. There is sort of a lot of prose, that, you know, historical pieces talking about the book, and then it's pages and pages of see the artwork, you know.
That's what it's about, isn't it? Yeah. It's about the artwork.
Yeah.
There's some. Go on, do you want to choose one, Dan? Do you want to find a page?
Well, I picked out that Brian Boland one because it's fucking, I loved it when I.
Which one's that? What page is that on, mate?
It's on page 161.
Okay.
It's from the when Anderson and Dredd go to Dead World and they take on the four Dark Judges. Yeah. It's just fucking lovely stuff. I'm always a big fan of Boland stuff, but I was just flicking through there and I came across like Carlos Esquerra's stuff.
Yeah.
There's so much.
Yeah, it's scans of original Carlos pages, aren't there? There's some Dylan Alan Davis in here. There's an original Alan Davis page.
There's one I'm definitely going to look up more, and that's Don Harley.
Right, page is that on, babes?
225 from the Space Freighters, Valiant Space Special, 1968. The reason I picked this one out, there's something that really... I love the artist Vanyo, as everyone knows. There's a certain... Yeah. The way that ink style is on there, I love that sort of... that look, so I'm definitely going to look...
Oh, yeah, that's so nice.
Yeah.
There was one I saw, I can't find that, but it was like from TV's Looking magazine.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there's some great old school Doctor Who pages as well. If you look at 229, Doctor Who, The Unheard Voice, it's just a load of seagulls attacking someone, but with John Pertwee in the background. It's amazing.
We were talking about Fatale. There's a Sean Phillips page on 305, which is cover of the Fatale Deluxe Edition Volume 2, and it's a beautiful full-page illustration. Tentacles and a naked lady.
I'm just going to offer one more page before I just sort of close up a couple of comments on this. But if you go to 329, you've got Lord of the Black Corsairs, which is Barry Windsor Smith. Like,
lovely. Fucking hell. Yeah, great.
Just him bloodied, standing on top of a mountain of dead people that he's just killed.
Yeah, obviously.
It's a bit like my wife. But but it takes you right up to now. So there are moments that you get some great recent Doug Braithwaite pencils.
Got the Ellingtons in there.
I was going to say Lorenzo Ellington's in it. Yeah. We've got an Obrow. We've got a couple of pages from an Obrow thing in there. He covers everything. He covers from obscure British weeklies and comics and newspaper strips I'd never heard of. You know, all the way through to popular Marvel, DC. You know, all the way through to Dave McKean, for example, 2000 AD, Vertigo, and all the way up to now. You know, it really does go all the way up to now. The only thing I think, I mean, I was going to say I could have done with an index, but then again, how do you index this? Because every page is a different thing.
It'll be
Yeah, it'd be an extra 50 pages or something, you know. But yeah, Dylan Teague. Oh, I love Dylan Teague.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, just some amazing. Chris Weston, all our favourites are in here. Yeah, so I'd recommend it, and I'd recommend buying it at the moment because, as I say, it's 25% off. I know a lot. I put the book up on the Facebook page, and a lot of people said they'd either got it or they're going to get it. And I think it's really worth it. It really is. It's a book that can sit on your coffee table for months, and you'll find something else new out.
Yeah, just looking at it now, I know I'm going to be reading it as soon as we've.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I would have closed it now.
Yeah.
There you go. That's my one.
Yeah, Sarah, I think you definitely need to put this on your.
Yeah.
I will. No, that is definitely going to be on the purchases. Yeah. So that's great.
Yeah. We'll forget this stuff. That's the problem with comics history. You know, people forget this stuff. We come and go so quickly, don't we? And the next new thing, and everyone forgets these great artists. And Dave's done a great job of this, you know.
And the beautiful sort of another thing about this book is. It's an influence as well. You look at pages and all of a sudden you're like, I love how they drew that mountain, for instance.
Yeah.
And then in your next piece of work, you're influenced by someone else's artwork, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I've referenced other people's art, not you know, clearly referenced it, but do you know what I mean? The style and the way that things look. I've done that many times with books like this.
And there's stuff you can look at and use in here. I'm just looking at the Joe Calhoun pages. They make you weep, man. They're that good. Yeah. And that's, 40 years ago. You know?
Yeah. Stunning. So, we know we've got one more fantastic book to come as well. So, Sarah, take it away.
Well, you guys read the Motherless Oven trilogy? Well, ongoing series, I should probably say.
I have not.
This is one that
I know is there's a lot of our listeners who have and love it.
Yeah.
But it is a gap in my reading, one of the many. But
well, I've just been reading the Book of Forks, which is the latest instalment of this particular series, and it's bloody gorgeous. You know, talking about beautiful artwork and stuff, Rob Davis is a whip smart cartoonist, and it's bloody impressive. I mean, I suppose for people who don't know anything about the series at all, it follows around a couple of kids, Scarpa Lee and Vera Pike, and it's all set in a sort of, I think it's meant to be a futuristic universe where it's sort of got a veneer of like 1970s sort of nostalgia sort of stuff going on, but it's a world where kids aren't born, kids make their parents, and they sort of make these like weird contraptions and sort of, I don't know, sort of their parents range from, like, I don't know, these weird sort of art installations sort of things, or, like, I don't know, some kind of steam engine or something like that. It's absolutely batshit, and it's just wonderful. I love it. And I
there's there's a twisted fairy tale thing going on in part of it, isn't it, I suppose?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just, there's so much to love about it. It's really great, and I think everybody should read it.
There's a sequence where it's raining knives in one of the books, which is just incredible to look at.
Yeah. Knife o'clock. Yeah, just some of the imagery that he sort of draws on, it's really quite savage in a lot of ways, but there's this, as you say, like a sort of lyrical fairy tale like softness to it in other sort of aspects, and it's just, yeah, I think it's a classic, and I think it's very underrated. I don't know whether you read his Don Quixote that he did a few years back as well.
I haven't read it,
good work. Like, he knows his stuff. I'm really looking forward to seeing where this goes.
I mean that trilogy, like, and Rob's won awards left, right, and centre for this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Is it with the latest one, is it best to start the first, or can
I would say start with Motherless Oven. I mean, you could possibly, it's baffling, so you could probably dip in at Book of Forks or something, but I'd say go back to the beginning. If you can get your hands on the book, go there, then Can Open His Daughter, then Book of Forks. It's just beautiful. It's good comicking. So
That's what we're all about on this show, and I think that's some of the best recommendations we've had. As a group, that's
good little slew, isn't it?
That's a good match. So we apologise for all the money that you're about to spend over the next coming week.
It's worth it,
but it is totally worth it.
Not spending on booze, are you? Let's face it, not comics.
No. Yeah, exactly.
I've treated myself so many fucking times over the past couple of weeks. I'm stuck here. I must just treat myself.
I've been trying not to. Normally I do that all the time. I just sort of look at the Amazon wish list or something and just think, ooh. I mean, actually, Ray's was a treat. I just thought, right, okay, let's do it.
Yeah.
And you just read fantastic books whenever that's the case. And that's what this show's all about. So we hope you enjoyed this week's episode, which delved into all kinds of things from Mr. Blobby.
That was my main takeaway.
To classic British comics and artwork.
Talked about Horrific Monster and Mr. and Jeffrey Dahmer.
And Jeffrey Dahmer.
Source of Nightmares and Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yeah. If you've got anything you want us to talk about on an upcoming show, or maybe there's any comics events or initiatives that you're pushing at the moment, which are very important in this day and age where, you know, we can't go out at the moment. So if there's some way to spread the joy of comics to everyone, whether it be kids or grown-up kids or immature kids like us, then let us know about them. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Any complaints, email them to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com.
Please do.
Follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod, where we will be retweeting, announcing things, and generally just having a fun old time.
Having a laugh,
because we don't care.
We should set a challenge.
A shout-out I forgot to do.
Go on.
Ladies Do Comics, Lucy Sullivan contacted me earlier in the week. They're doing a mentoring system where you get four hours of I think Zoom mentoring from one of the creators attached to Ladies Do Comics. It's £200 for the four sessions, but the places are quickly going. So if you go to the Ladies Do Comics website, I think this run through Eventbrite, you can go and get your tickets through that.
Okay.
Lucy's one of the mentors, and Lucy's always good company, and she's
amazing.
So.
Amazing.
Yeah, love Lucy. Yeah.
Friend of the show. That.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, well, you're a friend of the show now, Sarah, so
we're sorry. We'll never leave you alone now.
Friends.
Pod friend.
Friend.
if you lovely people out there go on Facebook occasionally, then you should go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And if you want to get involved with some of the community chat and art threads that Dan's been sorting out on a weekly basis, which you really should, join the group Awesome Comics Talk. We do talk about it every week, but it's genuinely the only place on Facebook you need to go. Because it's full of people talking about comics without any hard selling or anything like that. It's just comics joy. So
that sounds nice.
Yeah. Apart from that group and the burn down 5G towers group, that's the like
that's the ones that Dan's parts of. Yeah. Well, you're welcome to join the group, Sarah. And the only thing is, if you apply, you'll just have to answer a couple of questions. You know, and we will know if you listen to the show. During the questions, well, we'll probably just approve you straight away.
Yeah, you get approved, don't worry. You don't I noticed that Jason Wood at My Pal from 11 O'Clock Comics joined recently, and it says, "Are you a listener?" And he says, his answer to that was, "Does Tony have great hair?"
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
I do have great hair.
He does. Golden waterfall. Yeah. That's what it's like. And I currently have hair like Tony.
Yeah, we're like becoming brothers. I know. Well, I'm not your weird uncle, let's put it that way.
The lockdown means you've got your long locks now.
Yeah. Literally locked down. It's my locks are down.
Oh, yeah, good one.
Unbelievable. I suppose after 2 hours, it was only a matter of time before she started insulting me.
Yeah.
So thank you for listening, whether it's on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. if you listen on iTunes, subscribe and leave a review, and it helps get the word out. Whether you listen to us on any other networks like Spotify, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife, what other networks are we on, Tony?
We're on Pod I Need a Simp.
Fuck it.
That's a call back to a conversation we had just before we started recording, and I couldn't even do the comedy silence then. He got me, folks. And where can people find us online, etc.? Tony?
Neveronanything.blogspot.com, neveronanything.bigcartel.com, and neveronanything.podbean.com.
It's almost like you've got a brand.
I know, baby. Yeah. I like to say it was on purpose, but I just couldn't think of anything else.
And what are you on social media?
What's that, sorry?
You haven't said your social media. You haven't said your Twitter.
Oh, yeah. Ezohyz.
God. I'm not a bloody agent sometimes.
You are. You always encourage me. I like it.
I never encourage you to do that, though, Tony, because you shouldn't do that.
That's true.
You should stop it. Or at least get some cream. Dan, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter @VanguardComic, and you can read issue 18 of Vanguard starting this Wednesday at vanguardcomic.com.
Yes.
Forget clapping for nurses. Get out there, clap for issue 18.
Yeah.
My brother drives the train, and he pulled into the station the other day, and there was all these people clapping the train. It was on Thursday at 8 p.m. and it's like he's got an NHS thing down the side of his train. He leaned out the window and sort of like did a wave to everyone.
God. Oh, anyway, you can find how do I follow that? You can find me on social media, on Twitter and Instagram, at Jester Diablo, and you can read my Instagram comic Black on instagram.com/blackthecomic, or is it just at Black the Comic? What do you do with Instagram? Do you just call it at
Black? If you're going to go to through the desktop, it's /. Black the Comic, innit? But you just, if you're on,
yeah, and yeah, that's BLAK, which we're the train's left the station and we're rolling now. I cannot wait to see.
I know, man, I'm watching that every day. You're putting something up,
yeah, mm-hmm, yeah, it is, yeah, daily. Nice. There's a new,
there's a little bit of the folk core about that one as well, I've got to tell you.
Yeah,
I don't know what it's going to be, but
we'll find out.
But yes, we will have fun getting there. So, and Sarah, thank you for being an absolute legend.
Yeah, thanks, mate. Yeah, really good.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been really fun.
And the first guest after post 250.
Oh,
yeah.
My.
Yes.
I think it's been a cracking.
Plenty more to come.
Yep. I Where can people find you on social media and your website, etc.?
It's probably best if you find me on social media, on Twitter and Instagram. I'm Not Sarah Gordon, so that's NotSarah and GRDON.
So you're at Not Sarah Gordon.
There are a lot of Sarah Gordons out there. It's a problem. So
copycats.
Yeah, exactly. Damn it. I wasn't even the only one to graduate in the same year from my university. So there you go. You can find me there. You can get digital copies of my comics, if you fancy that sort of thing, from Gumroad/Sarah Gordon. So if you fancy that sort of thing. And then my actual official website is sarah-gordon.com.
Nice.
But find me on Twitter and Instagram. I post lots of stuff up there. It's the best thing.
Yep. You always retweet us. Very kind of you. Yes. Thank you, mate.
Yes. Yes.
It's good quality work.
You don't have to be nice now. The episode's finished.
Yeah. I see.
But it's been another fantastic episode. Hope you enjoyed it, folks. Come back next week for a new guest, because we're going to have guests for the next few weeks now. Loads more brilliant indie comics. And just stay safe, stay healthy, just keep creating and making the world a better place.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
That's a nice little message, V.
Thanks. fucking hell.
You know nicely done, Sarah. Thank you for coming back.
Stay.
What's that?
You know else where they got to stay?
Well, not yet, Dan, but we're going to get there. So thank you very much for listening, everyone. Go forth, read loads of comics from Dan, Tanny, Sarah, and
myself. Awesome.
Have a brilliant week, and as always, what should they do?
Stay awesome.
Stay awesome.
Awesome.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.